Crap.
Tony Miller. Tony Miller.
Tony in Entertainment. Welcome to the show, mister.
Well, thank you so much for having me. It's nice for once in a while to be on the other side of the microphone here.
Is it? How often do you do other people's podcasts? And
this is the second one, my friend.
Okay. So I was going to be like, all of the ones you've ever done. No. But out of the ones that you've done, and as far as like conversations you've had with people that are on the air, on the record, what are things that nobody's asked you that you've wanted to talk about, or something, a question that you might have wanted to be asked that you've never been asked?
Oh God, we never talk about like video games, wrestling video games, right? Like cool stuff from like our childhood. We always talk about what's going on now, here and there. We never talk about video games.
What's your favorite wrestling video game?
I mean, I think everybody automatically says, you know, No Mercy or something like that. But gosh, I have such a love for the first WCW Nintendo game. It just it holds a special place in my heart.
You talk about 64?
No, I'm talking about Nintendo, NES, before Super Nintendo, before Nintendo 64.
Oh, man, I don't remember that at all.
No, it had the Road Warriors on the – I actually have it back here. You know how much of a place it holds a spot in my heart? I'm going to actually show it to you here.
All right.
This one right here.
Yeah, I never played that.
I still have it in the case. Yeah, that's how much of a special place in my heart this game holds to me.
Man, what a nerd.
Oh, seriously, big time.
Yeah. And you know, saying nerd is not derogatory. I don't think
not at all
because like the level of acceptance and the level of like nerd became cool and dork became fine. Like all of that became, and like used to be, being a mark was considered derogatory. Mark, like I, as in the industry, in the business, it got to the point like when I first broke in, where if you ever got caught like wearing a WWF merch or anything like that, or if, you know, even like kind of like flipping out that a name's near you or something, you get called a mark and automatically like shamed for it. And that kind of went away. Trying to take pictures with wrestlers, that was in locker rooms and stuff, that was so frowned on. And that was one of my first like etiquette lessons. Like, compose yourself. You want to be seen as somebody who's on the level of those people, not somebody who's just a fan of those people. Because if you're just a fan of them, you belong with the fans and not on the side of the barricade. But my brain always was like, why, like we're marks too. Like, why else would we get in this business if we weren't marks? Why else would we? But you know, the biggest marks in the business are the boys, you know, the boys and the girls, anybody who's decided to take the leap to be in the industry, it would have to be because they're a huge fan of it. But I think the other part of it was like, you know, don't go tweeting about it. Don't go posting about stuff that's happening on the TV, because you'll be seen less as somebody who's in the business and somebody, and more seen as somebody who just is a fan of the business. Now I this is all kind of like before social media, but like when this started, but like, you know, why else would you be in something if you're not a fan of it? Right, I looked at it like you don't start a band and then automatically hate every other band. You don't start a band and then never wear another band's t-shirt. It felt like broken. It felt expired. It felt like some old timey stuff that's not modern enough for, because like fans aren't gonna go, oh, he's posting about stuff that's happening on WWF TV. He must just be a fan and not, you know, like it doesn't make any sense. Like of course we're gonna comment on stuff that we see on TV because we're fans too. Like the WWE wrestlers comment on things that happen on the TV that they're not involved with. Let's all do it.
Yeah, I mean, I guess if you want to talk about being a mark, well, let's mark out a little bit, because right now I'm wearing my Jackal Stevens t-shirt, and I'm actually just interviewed him a couple weeks ago, kind of after he won the CCW title down here in Miami, mm-hmm. Florida. But it was after his match, so we only did a quick interview. He was bloodied and tired, but we just set up another interview for Saturday this week. We're going to do it before. We're going to do a sit-down interview, a proper interview, where he's been in his career. And I'm like, why not rep Jackal Stevens right now?
Somebody down at CCW is very precious to me down there in Florida. Eddie Valentine, you know,
Valentine? He is the biggest stud muffin on the planet. Eddie Valentine.
He's one of my best friends.
I had him on the channel a couple weeks ago. Yeah. It's amazing.
He trained me. He's, you know, he was one of my male role models growing up. Like I'd say some of the most important things I've learned in life have come from lessons that Eddie's taught me. And actually I have in my living room, there's a dry erase board. And the day I moved in, I wrote on this and it's never come off. It says, don't be 12. And that's something that Eddie used to say to me when we were training. He would say, stop, don't be 12. So I made that the rule of my house. When you come in here, don't be 12. If you come in this house and you happen to actually be 12, you got to leave. You got to leave. My friend Steve's daughter, he came over and we watched the WrestleMania or something here a couple of years ago. And she was only 12 at the time. I think she's probably 18 or something now. So it's been a while. And I said, read the sign. You got to leave. Sorry. You can't be in here and also be 12. It's I didn't make the rules. I just wrote them down.
I'm going to ask him about that on Saturday when I see him.
Yes.
Well, Eddie, don't be 12.
I wonder, I mean, I'm sure he'll know exactly what you're talking about right away. So tell me a little bit, if you can, tell me a little bit about, how the idea of like being a fan and initiating that into being somebody who wanted to contribute in a broadcast way to the wrestling industry, to independent wrestling.
You know, what's crazy is I tell everybody that asks me, oh, how long have you been a fan? I said, you know what? If my dad brought me home from the hospital on a Saturday morning, we were probably watching wrestling Saturday night. Like it was that much of a staple every day of the week. Every night when I grew up, it was the Texas territories and the WWF and the NWA and the UWF and the talk shows. We watched it all. And then it was one of those things, you know, just having a passion for it, growing up, being a teenager in the Monday Night Wars time, and, you know, Sting being obviously my favorite wrestler of all time. My new podcast that I just launched this week is called Dropping Down from the Rafters, because I want to create the excitement that I once felt during those moments, you know.
Dude, the pops when Sting would drop from the rafters, the way the crowd would react, like you dream about those pops at night.
It's impossible to have that again.
Yeah, that's I think that the 90s, the state that the wrestling business was in, then there was millions of eyes on the product. And that I feel like that almost will never be back. That'll never. I wish it would come back. I would love it to come back. I'd love to contribute in some way to that coming back. But I still feel like it was lightning in a bottle.
100%, right time, right place. But to get back to your question, it was, you know, after watching wrestling through the 2000s and then just being a grown up and having other, you know, wanting to party and do stuff, like I completely stopped watching wrestling for years. The whole, I tell everybody during that John Cena era, like I couldn't tell you anything that went on in anything in wrestling. I just cold turkeyed it, was gone. And I tell everybody, it was actually going to a Gangrel independent show. I went because Scott Steiner was going to be at the show. So I went just because Big Papa Pump was going to be there. We took pictures with him. I didn't expect much. I hadn't been to an indie show in 15 years. And I remember it just being a bunch of old guys. And a lot of people just went to laugh. Okay. Cause like Marty Jannetty would be like the main eventer in these indie shows. And there was one or two guys that maybe make it, but it was a bunch of old guys. And when I went to this new independent show, the Gangrel was putting on, I was blown away by the talent and the hunger of these young men and women that I saw in this show. And I thought to myself, okay, I already had a YouTube channel. I had some stuff on there, but it had no real direction. How can I be involved in this? How can I, it reignited my flame to watch wrestling again. And then with AEW coming back and WWE finally finding its direction and not being so kid friendly anymore, I felt like the indies really brought me back to wanting to watch wrestling all over the place. And then thankfully YouTube and everything else really ignited my passion again for it. And I said, you know what? Something I've always wanted to do is do interviews. And how can I give back? How can I give back the excitement and the enjoyment that these men and women put their bodies on the line for us for very little money at these indie shows, all in hopes of making it big? Can I be just 0.5% in maybe one person's journey to help them? Can I help them sell some merch? Can I help them get new fans or people learn something about what can I do to give back? And that's when the whole interview started. Gangrel was amazing. He was a big part in letting us come into his student showcase. I interviewed him. He says, come back another time. I loved your interview. And from there, it just kind of trickled down and we start reaching out to conventions and other companies. And now it's companies contacting us to come out and wrestlers contacting us to be on the show and stuff like that. So it's really gone full circle. And it's honestly, it's something just people say, oh, how do you find the time? You know, you're busy, you're working, you're doing this, you got a family, you got everything else. But this is not work to me. This is something, gosh, if I was a millionaire, I would still do it because I feel like there's something just so special about having this opportunity. I feel I'm blessed that these guys and girls trust me to come on their, that they trust to come on my show or be interviewed by them. I'm not going to ask them, yeah, hey, do you like Monday Night Raw? No, no, no. We're going to get to know you. We're going to get to know you questions. And that's what I get lots of compliments about. They're like, thank you for not asking me
the same questions
over and over. Thank you for having some fun with us. And that's my plan. They have fun and that people get to know and hopefully they can make a few extra dollars just by being on my show, selling merch, getting booking. That's my goal.
Yeah. I'm pretty certain anytime I've ever been on anybody's podcast and like they've asked me about wrestling, the people who interview me don't know who I am. Don't really know. They just know that they like wrestling and they know I also like wrestling. So then they ask me like the very elementary questions that I get asked a bazillion or that I've already answered a bazillion times. Like how'd you break in? Who trained you? What inspired you? That kind of stuff. I'm like, we can talk about that. Sure. If you want to, but like, if you really want to know the answers to those questions, I've answered them a million times and you can look it up. There's many outlets of me already telling people like how I broke in and when I broke in and like that kind of stuff it's not that hard to find out if you really want to know that stuff. But I would absolutely love to have a conversation with you about anything about wrestling. If you have any questions to ask me about wrestling, like somebody last week asked me, I don't want to try to out anybody, but somebody,
yeah, don't drop a name. I'm not a name dropper either.
I felt like there was no research at all done. It was just that like, I'm a wrestler and they like wrestling. And they had a lot of other old time wrestlers on the show who they had no idea who they were either. Just like research was done via Wikipedia, and what's on there is what you found.
Wikipedia is not your friend when doing research.
Right. Yeah. I mean, there's way more research that could have been done other than, you know, just the very surface. And I think maybe the guy didn't think that there would be any other way to research me besides Wikipedia. If I didn't have a Wikipedia, I don't even know, but I think the only thing you could find on me on Wikipedia is like some results from shows I did when I was young. Like people go like, oh yeah, 2004, you did this. I'm like, yeah, I don't remember that at all.
Sure.
20 years ago, I don't remember. Like I've had lots of blows to the head since then, so I don't recall. So what kind of questions do you like to ask the most? What's like the most common types of questions that you'll be asking wrestlers when you're,
you know, training? What it's so funny because I don't go in with a script. Mm-hmm. I don't go in with a game plan, really, to be honest. Mm-hmm. Like I feel like my wife calls me Mr. Chatty because I feel like I can have a conversation with pretty much anybody. Like it's one of those things, we go on a trip and I get at least one conversation a day from somebody. I don't know what it is, what draws people to, like, whether I'm wearing some Transformers shirt and they're like, hey, remember when Optimus Prime did this? And now we're having a conversation about that. Or I'm wearing a Back to the Future hat. Now we're talking about Marty McFly. Whatever it is, I seem to be able to have a conversation. I don't really have set questions, you know, like, and especially as I watch a lot of, you know, I'm covering CCW a lot. It's one of the main companies that I cover. And I'm following their story and I'm following their journeys. So once a year, I try not to do an interview with somebody more than, you know, once a year. So it's kind of like then we can recap on their journey throughout the year and maybe talk about specifics about, you know, and how bad do they want it from when they started to now, or maybe the biggest lessons that they've learned. But you're not going to see me ask them, you know, what their favorite hold is. You know, it's just if they bring it up, they bring it up. We can talk about it. But like, I just go for freestyle conversation is what I mean. I do some research. Instagram, watching matches, stuff like that. I get a basic idea, but most of my podcasts are 45 minutes to an hour, and I've got mm-hmm. two notes down, and they're usually specifics to maybe one particular maybe company that they're working for, that they're branded. You know, oh, they're working Celsius is a sponsor of them. Let me make sure I get that in there. You know, like very important specific brand. Nike sponsors them. Let me get Nike in there for them. But other than that, or maybe one match we'll talk about that, maybe how I discovered them, you know. But other than mm-hmm. that, it's really a freestyle conversation.
Well, I mean, I think that any wrestlers who have ever said like, hey man, I like what you're doing or anything, it probably has to do with like they can smell how organic it is. Like they can sense how true it is, how sincere it is, and how genuine you are in wanting to actually like elevate their voice, and giving them a platform is important. And that might be why I invited you here today.
Oh, I certainly appreciate that.
to make sure, you know, it's we're all helping each other up. We're not holding each other back. And I think that wrestlers are probably used to a lot of people trying to elevate themselves and less trying to help them up. So the fact that they're sensing it, they're sensing that you're somebody who truly wants to better them. It's welcome.
Yeah. I had a high profile wrestler. I'm not going to name her name, but she's been on the bigger shows lately. And when I, after I, you know, before we started this interview, you know, she's like, oh, I trust you with your interviews because I talked to person XYZ who also I had on the channel, who's at a pretty big status right now. And had I not interviewed that person, you know, and they got, you know, because this person is always, you know how it is, especially with females out there, I'm sure, just getting hit up all the time. I mean, I have wrestlers that replied to me. They're like, I get a podcast invite every single day from someone. I can't do anymore. Sorry. But I did have somebody that said, hey, I reached out to this person. They said, go for it because they loved your interview. And this person's not doing podcasts right now because they're just on a big, big, you know, platform right now. And I'm like, I appreciate that. So it's always important to me to make sure that every single interview I do goes, you know, I treat them with respect. Like I would want to be treated as well too.
It's, you ever see the thing where it's like the poster's like attitude and it's like a pebble being dropped into the water, the ever widening circles.
Right.
So it is ever widening circles. So like what I would imagine, like if I were to go, hey, will you do my podcast to somebody? And then they like look at the show and see that maybe there's somebody who they know who's been on. They'll check out that episode and that'll sway them if they decide to take the effort to do that. Or maybe someone will be like, hey man, you should do my friend's podcast, or you should do my friend Tony's podcast, you should do Corey's podcast. Like that seems more like a direction that's aiding growth.
Yeah, I'm sure you know as a podcaster yourself. I mean, what we're doing now is not difficult. It's not hard. The hardest part, at least for me, is the scheduling of everything, the timing. They're traveling. We're doing stuff. That's the hardest part, is the scheduling, the timing, and going from there. That's really the most difficult part of doing a podcast.
Tony, how old are you, dude?
Oh, I'm in my 40s, sir.
Yeah. Well, I'm gonna say we're probably around the same age. I'm 39, so
okay.
I'm gonna be 40 in December. But when you said like being a teenager in the 90s and being a fan, like the Attitude Era and the Monday Night Wars, all of that stuff all going on at the same time was what made me decide I wanted to be a wrestler, because of how exciting all that was. That's what, like I said, the lightning in the bottle. That's something that I wanted to be a part of. I remember it, like exactly WrestleMania 13, Bret Hart and Stone Cold, the submission match. That was like what I was like, okay, I love wrestling. I love these emotions. And then I was like, oh, I'm going to watch it all the time now. And then I didn't. And then I didn't. And then the first Hell in a Cell came up with Shawn Michaels and Undertaker with the debut of Kane. And from that point on, I was like, yep, I'm watching it every week. You can't stop me. You can't stop me from watching it every week. That was what like really stamped it in for me to be a fan. Did you have a more modern, cause I know you had said you had fallen off for a while. What was the like modern moment that was like that for you? That was like, okay, I'm in this now.
God, I would say Hulk Hogan. And again, I'm going to date myself here. And I even told Hulk Hogan when I met him, was him defeating the Iron Sheik is my first wrestling memory. And again, mm-hmm. I was a little toddler. Can't remember. Sting defeating Ric Flair was probably just at the Great American Bash. Go back and watch that match. The pop. I mean, when they say it almost blew the roof off the building, it literally almost blows the roof off the building. There's certain moments like that. I remember Ronnie Garvin and Ric Flair in a steel cage match. And I, you know, we thought Ronnie Garvin was going to defeat Ric Flair for the championship, and Rick still pulled it out at the end. There's just like little moments in time like that, that just forever, like I think just made me into a wrestling fan.
Well, I was more referring to, like you said, the John Cena era, like the ruthless aggression kind of pushed you away. What right. was the thing that pulled you back?
Oh, it was definitely Gangrel going to his show, the independent okay. show, and the startup of AEW, to be honest, mm-hmm. was kind of the thing. I started watching WWE again when Ronda Rousey came in. It was really my wife that was a fan of Ronda Rousey that was like, hey, can we check this out? And then from there, we would watch Raw on a regular basis. I went to my first Raw in probably 12 years or so when Ronda was going to be here, because we went for that. And then it pulled me in. WWE still hadn't hooked me though enough to be a full-time wrestling fan again. And that's when, you know, AEW came along and they did the first show. And even the first show, to be honest, I was not going to buy, because I was very hesitant. And the one thing that sold me on it, and I'll name drop because he is a real personal friend of mine. That's Chris Van Vliet. Did an interview with Cody Rhodes, and Cody said, I promise you this pay-per-view, it's going to deliver. You do not want to miss out. And I'm like, you know what? I'm going to give it a shot. And I spent my $50 or whatever it is, bought the pay-per-view, and it really brought me back into wrestling. And I think wrestling as a whole, whether you love AEW, you hate AEW, whatever it is, the entire industry has a new life to it because AEW is around. It's made WWE step up their game. It's made the indies, you know, them work harder because there's more options for them now all to make money.
Mm-hmm. What do you think of AEW? Are you still a fan?
Religiously? Yeah. I mean, I missed last night because I had some family stuff to take care of. So I'm going to probably watch Dynamite right after this. But I am the person that gets up Saturday morning with my breakfast. I watch Rampage Saturday morning. Collision, it's if I'm not busy Sunday morning, it's one of those things. Maybe I'll watch Tuesday night or Wednesday night before Dynamite goes. But I would say 95% of Dynamites I still watch live every Wednesday. The pay-per-views, I've seen every single one of them. Even last year, we were traveling in November, and we were on a road trip. And I said to my wife, I said, you know what? Thankfully, she loves wrestling too. I've gotten her into it, so it's great. But I said, hey, we're going to be Atlanta. You know, we're doing a few things. But at night, you know, they're showing it at the movie theater.
Oh, yeah, they were showing.
Yeah, so at the like a Regal Cinema, I believe it was. And we actually went to watch it at Regal Cinema with a bunch of people in the theater.
There was other people there.
Yeah. No, it was probably like a dozen people inside the movie theater. But what was cool is I was actually on the media scrum with Tony Khan leading into it. I even mentioned it. I said, you know, as somebody who's watched all the AEW pay-per-views, I'm going to see it at the theater. How important is your relationship with the movie theater? And at the time he was like, yeah, it's hopefully something that we can build off of. So it was actually nice to get a Tony Khan answer on the podcast as specifically something relating to what I was doing as well too. Mm-hmm.
Cool. I have submitted to do the scrums and stuff for media passes and stuff. For my podcast, but I've never got on.
It's tough. It really is tough. I've only been on, I'm on the phone call one, the one he does via web. I'll admit it. I did try to apply for, I think it was Revolution that was down here in Orlando. And they're like, sorry, we have limited amount of tickets. I'm like, it's all good. Just means we got to keep working harder and putting out more cool stuff, getting more cool guests. And we're going to get it eventually. So it's all good.
Yeah, I mean, I love that AEW exists. I love like when it first started, it was going right up against NXT, and I loved doing that, the whole being able to switch channels like I used to do in the Monday Night Wars. I loved all that
nostalgia,
felt nostalgic, and it felt like a part of my childhood came back there for a minute. But I think the flame doesn't burn as bright as it once did for me. But I feel like as a talent, as a wrestler, as a talent, it's hard to kind of observe what's going on and not feel like it's not a cool kids club, and I'm not a part of any cool kids club. I just like last week stopped watching it, and I'm gonna not watch it anymore. Okay. I it's still gonna be recorded on my DVR, and I might just stop recording it. But I think the whole main reason that they got Collision was because of CM Punk. Like Turner wanted them to start Collision and wanted CM Punk back to start it. And then there was childish screwery, you know, like screwballness. And it was like, the wrestling business was built off of tough guys who pretended to be tough guys, not tough guys pretending to be wrestlers. Like, how did that Andrade guy punch Sammy Guevara and not get fired? But CM Punk gripped up another kid who's less of a name than Sammy Guevara, and like, and just get suspended. I didn't understand it, and it just feels like because of butthurt vendettas, and just like manipulative power struggles, and it just felt too toxic to me, and I just felt like you guys aren't doing for wrestling what you think you're doing. You're turning wrestling into something that's not for the wrestlers. It's for your friends. And that's not good for the wrestling business. And then you draw 300,000 people to watch your show when, like, that's not what WWE is shattering records. How is the business? So, because I think everyone's starting to also notice what I'm noticing. What you guys are doing isn't good for us all. It's not good for the boys. It's good for your boys. And that turned me off quite a bit. But I love that it's an option. I love that people are getting work. I love that, you know, they have TV, but I really don't believe that they're going to keep TV. I think that now that this is being recognized and the ratings are showing it, that TV is going to stop. They're going to get the plug pulled out from them.
You think they lose a Saturday?
Probably. Yeah. I mean, if not all of the shows, if not all of Turner, like I would not put my, you know, if I was a Turner executive, I would not, not give a vote of confidence to the show getting better from this point.
I guess when you're dealing with Turner, we've learned from the WCW days, you have to be very careful in all your decisions, right?
Yeah. And what is this discipline committee that they just made up? Because there was no discipline committee when it came to Eddie Kingston doing whatever he did. And there was no discipline committee when it came to Andrade doing what he did. There was no discipline. It's just a made up word. Nobody there has any discipline. Like, who's actually in charge of disciplining anybody? That seems so flimsy and not real at all. Show me somebody's name on a business card that says part of the discipline committee. If that was a position before he made that announcement last week on TV, they were firing CM Punk. Show me somebody who's on this discipline committee. If the discipline committee to me just seems like it's the EVPs and their wives, I don't support that. I can't support that.
Yeah, you definitely have a different perspective as being somebody who's been in the biz versus me as an outsider to the biz. You definitely have a different perspective, that's for sure.
I mean, sometimes people are difficult to work with, but then you work with them. You don't go, oh, they're too difficult to work with. If somebody's too difficult to work with and they're also drawing you a huge house and getting you ratings, you work with them. You make it work. And don't eliminate them and then do a victory lap. You petty little bitches. Like that, dude, that it's so cringy. It's so cringy that it just makes me want to watch the video of CM Punk beating them up in the locker room last year. Like, it makes me more want to see that.
I got nothing for you. Yeah, I'll let you do your passionate speech on it. I got nothing for you on that one.
I already feel like I've talked about this like so many times on shows and on the record and on podcasts since it's happened. And I might be shooting my own self in the foot because I am a talent who wants to work full time in the wrestling business for sure. It's something I devoted my entire life to, but I can't be seen as difficult to work with or not part of the cool kids club, not clicked in correctly, not stealing everybody's shit, not doing suckets to people and Wolfpack stuff to people. It just, it feels like a parody of pro wrestling. It doesn't feel like it's for the wrestlers. It feels like it's for the friends who, you know, just happen to know the right people. A non-meritocracy, which wrestling should be a meritocracy for sure. It should be like, this guy's good and it's undeniable how good he is, so we're going to push him correctly. And then they're like, I think they're like, oh, this guy sells t-shirts and all of our friends like him, so let's give him spots. And it's like exposing the business in a way that is not helpful to return business, return customers. Like, if you've seen every trick that pony can do, why would I want to tune in next week to watch it again? Every match looks exactly the same. What's special about me wanting to turn the show on and watch it? I came up with the phrase like a couple of days ago. I said it's kind of like clickbait, but the click means you click the channel to something else. Like, I'm gonna watch this shit that I could see last week. I get now 3 days of the week I can watch the same dudes doing the same matches, the same storylines, the same, like, the same type of stuff. Like, what's different about it? And now Collision is just going to be another Rampage at this point. Like, I don't, like, it was, I think it was better, because I think that they said that Punk had like some creative, he had some booking power, and the shows were looking like pro wrestling shows held that had pro wrestling on them. And now it's just going to be some douchey, skinny, fat nerds doing victory laps because they got some star fired. Get the fuck out of here, dude. I don't want to associate my name with that stigma. I mean, sure, I'll take a consulting job. Sure. I'm a wrestling vet. I've been doing this for 24 years now. So, Don't pay attention to my experience. Don't pay attention to any of that. As long as your friends get money, I'll go wait tables. I'm fine with that. So I don't want to sound like I'm bitter, because I'm not. I feel
you say
like
how it is. Like, you say how you feel, which is good.
It's very c'est la vie. What it is. The wrestling business was here way before I was around, and will be around way longer than I'll ever be around on this planet. So this is just if this is the evolution of the wrestling business, I'm evolving in other ways. that's why I'm a podcaster now. Well, I still wrestle, man. I still do shows. I as long as wrestling's still fun for me, as long as wrestling's still fulfilling to me in some way, like I feel like I'm creating moments for people, and I'm facilitating growth for individuals, and I'm interacting with fans in a way where, like, I feel like everything I do serves every other thing that I do. And I'd want that to be every part of what I would lend to a national audience. Cause I've already given up on the fact, like, I don't think WWE wants a 40-year-old brain surgery survivor. I don't think that they're investing their time and money into that. And I kept going like, oh, I think, AEW, maybe that might be my only hope. But now that hope is dashed. And I don't want to say I'm bitter or hopeless, but there's more than one way up the mountain.
And it's true. And that's what wrestling should be. It should be about those memories. I mean, we touched on it earlier with Eddie Valentine and CCW and the shows that they put on down here in Florida. Every single time, it draws you in to what we loved about wrestling, about what I loved about wrestling growing up. Every single match has purpose to it. Every single, there's payoffs, there's teases, there's what's to come, there's follow-ups, there's continuations, there's this guy, you know, it's, everything is so well planned out. It's one of those things that just, that's the wrestling that like draws me in.
Did you watch the Prison Break match?
Yes, I was there for that one with the crowd. Yeah. Yes. Yeah, I threw a few clips up on the channel as well too.
He sent me the link to it, and we watched it together on FaceTime, and I was like, because originally we did one Eddie and Dahmer were teaming against me and Rick, my old tag partner, and we did one of those matches, but the building was. It was a disaster. The building had a low ceiling, and we had like a little step stool, and it was so dumb. It wasn't like a ladder. It's not that much higher.
I'm sure.
You actually pulled it off. You guys pulled it off. I'm so proud. I'm so happy for you.
Killer match. I even told Eddie he was out in the
brainchild for years.
Yeah, he was out in the parking lot smoking a cigarette when we were leaving. He's like, "Hey, how'd you like the match?" I'm like, "Dude, Eddie, you guys freaking killed it." You know. And I'm loving his new tag team. He's the Knight Riders right now. They're having a great time. I mean, the crowd, I don't know how those guys aren't mega stars. The guys that they fought in the prison break match.
Yeah.
They're insane. They're sick.
The hair is so cool. The presentation is so cool.
Everything
about what they got going on is rad as hell. So, yeah, we'll see where it goes. They'll probably be somewhere.
Yeah, I hope so. I hope so. They've got everything. They're the complete package.
So I'm not somebody who does like really interviews as far as like the same as what you said. Like I don't really do a whole lot of preparation. I don't go into anything with any kind of script or any prepared questions. But I definitely want to give you the opportunity to ask me anything or say anything that you'd like to say or ask in the meantime.
What would you say the biggest lesson that you've learned about yourself as a podcaster has been versus, being a professional wrestler?
The biggest lesson I probably learned about that is to take things less personally. Take things way less personally because things come up and it's not. And even if it is something to do with like my reach isn't big enough or like you, like my audience isn't big enough. And that's the reason you can't do my show. I say that as not a me problem. I see that as a you problem. Like if a person I reach out to do my podcast won't do my podcast because I don't have enough downloads or something like that. That's like, I look at them as like kind of shallow. I look at them as kind like that. That's kind of like, I don't feel disrespected, but I don't respect you as much anymore. You know, that kind of thing.
So, well, I appreciate when somebody at least gives you an answer. Mm-hmm. The people that, you know, read the message and don't even reply. I think that would be the one that drives me a little bit insane because it's kind of like, well, what is it? Like, it's cool. Like, I never take offense to anybody saying, hey, you know, like, I can't do it or I'm doing too many or I'm not doing any right now or whatever it is, blah, blah, blah. It's all good. It is what it is. But, like, when they read the message and don't even, like, say, oh, no, thank you or whatever, that's the one. Because I feel like when you reach out to me, if I just ignored your message, if I just read it, you'd be like, well, why don't you want to do it? Like, it's cool. Like, whether you just don't do podcasts at all or whatever the reason is, but it's at least like a little courtesy to just drop it and just be like, yes or no, I think it goes a long way professionally.
Well, I think that a lot of people who just read, who look at it or see it and don't respond to it, I think that it's not that they suck. It's just that they're not they're not looking at like the bigger picture. They're not considerate because they don't have the same experience at doing this kind of thing as us. You know, they aren't reaching out to other people's like DMs. Like that's if I send out 100 DMs and one person writes me back, nice. If 99 people don't see it, or they see it and they don't respond, I don't care. You're just one of 100 people who didn't respond. So I learned to take all that less seriously because, bro, it's not a real problem. You know what I mean? It's not a real life problem. It's very first world, like modern times thing. And I can't waste any of my right nows on right nows I won't get back. And those right nows I won't get back is getting my feelings hurt by people being inconsiderate. Or, you know, I would also really love considering the source on these things too. Cause I go like, if this person won't write me back, that's a them problem. Like their head is messed. Like, or they're like, I do have times when like somebody writes me a message and I see it and I don't say anything back right away. Doesn't mean I'm not going to say something back, but sometimes I just don't say anything back right away. So one day, maybe you'll hear back from these people who see it and don't write back.
There you go. Always got to look at the brighter side of the picture.
And a lot of times people will appreciate consistency. Like if I see somebody saw it and didn't write me back, I'll wait 3, 4, 5 months and I'll say something to them again. And if they don't say anything again, I'll wait another 5, 6 months and say something again. And then they'll be like, wow, dude, I appreciate how, you know, committed you are to staying consistent in wanting to do this. You must really want to do this. So it's a test, you know. I think everything we do is a test. We just don't know yet.
It pretty much is, right?
yeah. The consistency is what the drum represents. That's why I have the drum, and I start every episode with the drum because, you know, it's a. It represents consistency. I think one of my favorite podcasts is Pete Holmes. Pete Holmes. Mean it weird?
He's a comedian. No, not familiar.
He once had a late night talk show that came on TBS like right after Conan O'Brien, and Conan was talking to him about consistency, and he said, "You keep on." Let's say you have like a triangle, one of those bing, bing, bing. You keep ringing that triangle. Eventually someone's going to be like, did you hear that? Do you hear that? Do you hear that ringing? That's why I feel like I do that with the drum. Like I'm going to keep beating my drum the way I beat my drum. And eventually someone's going to be like, you been hearing that? You hear that drum? Where's that coming from? And that's why I bring it to the ring with me before all my matches. It's got a real sacred place in my heart. Cause I think, The way I feel about pro wrestling, to me, it's deeper than just an art form or just a sport. It is my religion. It is my drive. It is what has made me who I am. I got into the wrestling business when I was 14 years old. So the person who I was a at risk kid, and I was on probation. I was a bad kid. I was hanging out with the wrong crowd. And then I found pro wrestling and it saved my life. And I will do everything to represent in my most sacred way, my love for this sport and create those moments for those people, because people created those moments for me when I was a kid. And I think about like the type of people that I looked up to when I was a kid, and the people who I idolized, just indie legends, just around Philly, like what kind of impressions I would have with just to hear those people's names or to run into them out in local pizza shops or whatever, like that, if I can be that to just one person, you know what I mean? It feels like I'm definitely beating this drum consistently. in a way that needs to continuously be beat.
Yeah, I like that because I feel like, you know, when, you know, the high school era, when everybody gets in trouble and stuff, I just had such a love, like a passion. Like I was wrapped up with Monday night and Thursday night and, you know, Saturday and everything that it was like. And I'd be the one that came to school and wanted to talk about wrestling every week and every day and whatever it was. And I feel it is one of those things that can just, I feel it's the best art form. Like, give it to me over the movies, over the music, over the TV shows. Like, give me professional, good professional wrestling. Like, give me those stories. Give me, wrap me in, suck me in, keep me there. And it beats any movie that's out there except for the Goonies. And it beats,
Does it beat She's All That?
Oh, you know, did you see my DVD back there?
Yeah. You did?
Well, it's signed by Rachel Lee Cook. So that's why it's back there. Yeah.
That's rad. That's really cool.
It does beat She's All That, though. Yes. It's, I've got, I think, I actually started getting VHS copies of movies because I'm such a retro guy. So I've got like RoboCop, Autograph, couple other ones that aren't out here, but yeah, I've got some Hulk Hogan stuff, some, you know, the Funko Pops, all that stuff's autographed back there.
Cool, man.
That's why She's All That's back there, and it's autographed by Rachel Lee Cook.
I was recently busting chops of a referee that I'm friends with. He showed me his Funko collection and I was like, man, I knew you were a dork, but I didn't know how much of a dork you were until you showed. Like, you had full walls of.
I think, can we pan up? I've got some more up there, but those are Thundercats and Goonies up there. I once had, I'm not even going to lie to you, probably like 300 at one point. It was during the pandemic, you just got addicted. And all of a sudden, I had a storage unit. But thankfully, I've been able to move. I'm like, okay. Which ones are important to me? Yeah, which ones are important to me? You know, which ones? If I looked at it, I'm like, yeah, it's just gonna stay in the storage. It's gone.
Did you sell them?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Did you make any good profits?
It wasn't bad. It wasn't bad. Yeah. Cool. Yeah. Cool. Sold them through Mercari. Went online. Sold them through there, and it was a lot of work. You know, you got to box them up. You got to ship them. You got to had to buy a printer. But you had all these things just sitting here, and I'm like, it's time to go. And then I bought the pro wrestling crates. I still haven't even unboxed this month. I usually do an unboxing video. I have it sitting here because I'm like, oh, maybe after the podcast tonight I'll unbox it. And then, you know, half the time it's like you keep two things in there and I sell the rest of them. I'm like, yeah, I keep the t-shirts most of the time. And I'm like, I'm not going to do nothing with an 8x10 autograph or a sticker or something like.
I could show you some of the stuff I have. I have like random things sitting here at my desk, and I don't have a lot of like Funko Pops. I have a few of them out in my living room. There's just like ones that I think are neat that I wanted to have. I have Harry and Lloyd from Dumb and Dumber.
Okay.
I have My Pet Monster. I have Zorn from Son of Zorn. And I have...
But here's the question. Do you know anybody that doesn't own one, at least one, right?
I don't know.
Even my mom owns one. We bought her one, like a Santa Claus Coca-Cola one.
My mom has Christmas ones. I got her.
Exactly.
Tigger for Christmas ones that had the Santa hat.
Santa hat, of course. So they have at least one, right? It feels like.
Yeah. And I got my brother, Harry and Lloyd, too. So he also has Harry and Lloyd from Dumb and Dumber.
Right. I have a coworker of mine has one and they didn't even know what it was. I'm like, oh, look at that Funko Pop. They're like, what's a Funko Pop? But they had got like, it was like, wasn't Princess Diana, but one of those royalty ones or something like that because they liked it. And somebody bought it. It wasn't even in the box anymore. It was just, you know, the figure on the shelf. I'm like, oh, you got that Funko Pop. They're like, what's a Funko Pop? Like, you own a Funko Pop.
I have one outside of the box that's sitting right here. I'm about to show it to you. And it's I took it out of the box because it says it glows in the dark. I've never seen it glow in the dark, but I thought it would be cool. It's this little Bam Bam.
Okay. He looks super cool. Yeah. It's like, I think you have to put it like in the sunlight for like 12 hours and then take it away. Or
it, right, it, at, right here. Let's see.
Yeah, they don't really glow in the dark without like juicing them up or something like that.
And I have like little, I have other little doodads here. I got an Iron Sheik figure here.
Classic.
I got a Batman over here. And I got some Ninja Turtles. I got a Minion. Yeah, so just, you know, I understand being a dork. I do. Got this cool Rick.
Is it for Rick and Morty? Yeah.
Yeah, man. I'm the biggest Rick and Morty nerd there is. I have a Morty it's like a magnet bumper sticker thing on my car. And it's so sun faded, like you can't even tell what it is anymore. But it was Morty at one point. But I'm afraid to take it off the car because it'll just be a big mark.
Right. No, it's engraved on there forever. Yes.
Maybe I'll replace it. Maybe I'll re-get it. And because you know, I had a Rick one and a Morty one, and the Rick one was over the fuel door. Like the gas pump.
Okay.
And the Morty was on the other side of the car, directly where that would be. So there was Rick on one side and Morty on the other side, and somebody stole my damn Rick. I think I'm gonna take credit for like maybe that I'm such a good heel that I pissed somebody off that they knew which car was mine and they wanted to steal mine.
Okay. Let's go with that. That makes you feel like you did a job well done at the end of the day.
Job well done. I was a heel that really pissed people off. They were like, I'll show you.
Okay.
I'll steal the Rick sticker off your car.
But does that kind of stuff, I mean, I've heard stories about like, you know, crazy fans and heels and them really taking stuff personal. Has anything like that ever happened besides maybe the sticker that like, they confronted you or did anything that was like past the boundaries of fan and wrestler?
Well, I mean, I've had parents confront me about how I made their kids cry and stuff like that. I mean, that hurts my feelings. I don't want to make their kids cry. I know that, like, I'm sorry you didn't explain to them that I didn't mean what I said. Did they cry? Did they cry when the Shield broke up, when Seth Rollins hit Roman Reigns with the chair? I'm sorry. I'm not sorry that I did what I did. I'm sorry you had the reaction that you did to it.
That's true. I don't remember crying too much as a wrestling fan growing. I'm trying to think of a situation that really like, I really can't think of one. I think the only one that actually really, really broke my heart, like legitimately, and to this day, because right after Sting, he was my second favorite wrestler of all time. And now, for obvious reasons, I cannot watch his matches. And of course, that's Chris Benoit. Was like, that was the heartbreaker to me when that's
different than a heel. That's past, turn.
Of course. Yeah. No, 100%. Yeah. Yeah.
I also have this thing here that I think that you would like. I got it on Twitter. There's a store on Twitter, and it's called the Smark Button.
Okay.
And when you hit it. The chance things like you deserve it and this is awesome. Holy shit. But they sent this to me from Twitter. If you go on to Smark Button on Twitter, you can find that.
Okay. Well, actually, I am thinking of the only situation where I almost did legitimately cry, and I remember calling my best wrestling friend at that immediate time, and it should be no surprise, was the night that the fake Sting came out of the limo and kicked Luger in the back or in the stomach. And I thought he actually turned heel and joined the NWO. And I remember calling on my mom's landline, you know, in 1996, and be like,
dude, it was,
did you see what happened? Sting turned.
Dude, Hulk Hogan joining the NWO, that
was shocking.
That got a lot of people.
It did.
That got emotions happening. I remember everybody calling me and talking to me about it. Oh my God, did you see what happened? Like, I remember everybody talking about that in school. I remember that being like a hot topic issue.
Well, it's still one of those things. If you show it to somebody that didn't follow wrestling over the years and you show them that moment today, because I remember when my wife and I first got together and she didn't know too much about wrestling and it was, you know, who Hulk Hogan was. And you watch that moment. That moment is one of the most iconic moments to where it can be jaw-dropping to someone today that's only the casualest of wrestling fan that never really watched but only knew of red and yellow Hulk Hogan. It could still be a jaw-dropper here in 2023.
I just have a few more things for you, man, and then I'll send you off into the sunset with a hot dog.
Absolutely.
So
the big money, right? The hot dog and the handshake.
Yeah, exactly. So what I love about doing this show is I love that it's at the timestamp on right here and right now and who we are. The reason I called it Evolving with Corey Castle was so that you could evolve with me from the very start of the show to the current day, because I'm going to continue doing this until I'm not here anymore. I want this continue to grow me. I think about who I used to be before the show ever started, and I maybe was a version of myself that I wouldn't have liked. Maybe I would have been somebody who I wouldn't have been so proud of as I am now. So with that said, I like to have conversations that are on the record, and I like to say things about like my real feelings on things, and I love to be vulnerable, and I love to kind of shoot, you know. I love to talk about how I really feel about things. I want to say just this as we're talking on the record, I want to say how psyched I am that we're friends now, and I look forward to whatever the future is. I want to give you the opportunity. I want to let you know, I'd love to be a resource for you in any way. If there's anything I can ever advise you on that would be helpful to you, or if there's anything that you think would be a good idea that you want to throw my way, I'm all ears. If you ever feel like you don't have a friend in this world, if you feel like you just need judgment-free conversation, you can call me. You can call me day and night, anytime. And what I want to do is I want to give you the opportunity to do a segment that I call audio time travel, right? So what I'll do is I say, like, let's say 20 years from now, somebody who knows you now and loves you now stumbles across this piece, this recording, in a way that you can, you know, inspire them to be a better version of themselves. What takeaways, what is the most timestamped evergreen messages you could give to those people? Let's say like your family, your best friends, your kids, your nieces, nephews, anybody who listens.
I think it's one of those things where it's just, you know, enjoy life, be good to people. Life is too short to be douchey. There's so much crap going in this world. Whether, you know, one of the questions you asked me before we get on, I'm like, I don't talk about politics and religion because all of it's just horrible in my opinion right now.
It's a trap.
But enjoy the ride, have a good time. And don't have no regrets. Most importantly, you know, when I started up this podcast, man, I could tell you the first couple wrestling shows that I went to do interviews. Dude, I was sitting in my car. I was nervous, you know, meeting new promoters for the first time that I only talked to on Facebook. I'd sit there shaking, you know, sweating almost. Like, I was kind of a wreck. It was nerve-wracking. Then they're like, you know, they're so used to doing it. They're like, oh, just go back in the locker room and go grab who you need. And I'm like, go back in the locker room. What do you mean? I'm like back here wandering around. People are like, who is this guy? I'm like, hey, so-and-so, I sent you a message about doing an interview. Oh yeah. Okay. I'll be out. Then you just stand out there and you're just kind of waiting. Now I feel like over the several years of doing this, like the confidence has grown 10,000 times. Like, I have no issues walking into a place right now with a promoter I just met through Instagram and walking in and being like, okay, where am I setting up? And, you know, where can I be at? I actually say, where is the music not going to be playing so loud that my interviews are going to be distracted or copyrighted during the thing? I need a quiet place. I need a room, and I can handle it from there. I've got promoters that'll say, oh, you know, I can't really maybe talk to you. I don't need you to talk to me. I got this under control. We've got the interview set up before we go. We've got the confirmations. I'm talking to A, B, and C. Let's do this. So don't have no regrets. Do, you know, the things that we all say we want to do things, right? And how many of us just put it on the back burner, whatever it is in life. And this was something that I was thinking about. I talked about Gangrel getting me inspired in this, and I thank him a million times. Still, I've had him on the channel a couple times. The first wrestler I actually ever interviewed on the channel was Glacier from WCW at a convention. And he was with a comic book creator that I knew that I had bought some comics for. And the guy knew I had a channel. And I asked him, I'm like, is it okay if I ask Glacier a few questions? And this was right before AEW started. And he's like, yeah, if he's fine with it. And I'm like, dude, I was such a big, again, marking out, WCW fan. I didn't have a microphone. I didn't have anything. I just had a little point and shoot camera. It's loud, but he gave me the opportunity. And I remember, I'm going to name drop. I get Chris Van Vliet because we've done interviews before. He's been on my channel, so it's on record. I was his cameraman for a while he was down here in Miami as a correspondent. Mm-hmm. So that's how he helped influence me and guide me into some of the things that I needed to do. But I remember texting him right away. I'm like, dude, I just interviewed Glacier. Like, it was like the coolest thing in the whole world. But having the confidence and just doing what you want to do, you know, don't have no regrets on it. Because if I hadn't started this, I know I would have been like, same thing with starting the podcast. I put it off forever. I just wanted to do the live interviews. Once I did my first few podcasts, I'm like, this is amazing. Let's roll. Did my first live stream 2 days ago. We're talking on a Thursday here. I did it 2 days ago. Something I've been thinking about for a while. I had Julie Cutler. She's amazing. She does Fightful Select. She does ring announcing all over the country. We did an hour and a half podcast, like almost seamlessly. And I was like, why was I waiting so long to do things? So don't wait to do stuff that you're truly passionate about. Go out and do it. If you fail at it, or you don't like it, you did it. But go out there and enjoy the ride.
Appreciate you, man. Thank you.
Yes.
Hypothetically, I'm gifted you this show. So this is the first episode of your new show, Evolving with Tony Miller. In a very Jerry Springer's Final Thought type of way. Just take the most valuable takeaways from this conversation we've had for the last hour. And wrap it up into a pretty bow, like Jerry Springer's Final Thought. And that's how we'll start taking it home.
Man, just, you know, enjoy the ride. You know, like don't live with no regrets. I mean, I think that's the biggest thing that we've talked about and that you've also learned is kind of like, just go with it and don't have hard feelings. We've all get those rejections, those denials, those no answers. I know, thank God I have a wife that's absolutely amazing. She's like, don't take it personal. Don't worry about it. You know, you've got all these other people reaching out to you. Just go with the flow and, you know, the good will come to you. And maybe it wasn't meant to be if, you know, they don't want to be on your show.
Right. Yeah. Maybe the, and it's funny, man. Like I just got fired via text message from my job, from my boss. And I was like, I'm glad he did that. He did me a favor. I don't want to be somebody who would work for somebody that would be that much of a bitch that they couldn't talk to me on the phone or they couldn't talk to me face to face about it. So like you sometimes people not answering you is them doing you a favor. They maybe aren't a good fit for your show.
100%.
Do you do any impressions?
Listen to me now. It's Arnold, and I need you to subscribe to Tony Entertainment. Do it. Go now. Do it now. That's about all I got for you.
So
how all my videos end with the Funko Pop of Arnold going saying subscribe to the channel. Do it. Go now. Do it now.
Where's that Funko Pop at?
Which Arnold do you want to see? Because it's obviously it's always handy because if I need it for any reason, you got this one. And of course you got this one. And I've got the one from Jingle All the Way up in a box. So that one doesn't come out. But yeah, I've got the Terminators right there.
Dude, I was just wearing my Terminator 2 shirt. The last episode I was just doing, I changed it because I get so sweaty. But if I was wearing it right now, that'd be funny.
Second favorite movie of all time, right after The Goonies.
Terminator 2 is all-time greats, man. It's one of the all-time greats.
For sure, for sure.
So in your best Arnold, you'd say the way we wrap it up, we say be fun, have safe, keep evolving.
Be safe, fun, keep evolving.
Thank you.
Absolutely.
I just want to say one more time. Anybody, if this is your first time checking out the show, I got 306 other episodes. You can go back and check those out if you had a good time with this, if it's lent you any value to your life. If I can continue to lend you value to your life, if the effort that I'm making to put this show out equates to value in your life, I would only ask you to take the effort to hit the like button, subscribe, comment, let me know you exist, and tell me what your favorite parts of the episodes are. Check out Evolving with Corey Castle wherever you find podcasts. Subscribe on YouTube, and you know, make sure you're kind. Make sure you stay kind. Stay kind to others. Stay kind to yourself. Don't take things so personally. Consider the source. Be fun. Have safe. Keep evolving. Show's over.